If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 21, Pre-Show.
Hello everyone and welcome to our standard pre-show where we put out an episode the week before the debut of our new season. And of course, with Season 21 starting on Friday of next week, we thought it would be a perfect time to release this episode. Now, you will recall, in past seasons, what we've done is either release old episodes of Dark Bites, our Patreon-only show, or, last season, we interviewed Ruth Roper Wild about her series of books. However, this time around, because it took place so often during Season 20, I thought and had many requests to do, I would do an episode about some of my experiences, my family's experiences, and my friends' experiences. Now, how that turned out was my friends' experiences were much better than mine. However, I will still throw in a couple of mine, some of which our Patreons may have heard already, and a few of my family's, and again, some of our Patreons may have heard already, so I'll kind of skim over those and be as succinct as I can. Because one friend in particular, which started with a very short back and forth and one very short tale, soon turned into something much bigger, as he then went to ask his family if they have their own experiences, and when he regaled them to me, I realised I've heard them from him before, so we tried to formalise his experiences and his family's too. Because believe me, they are the perfect appetizer for Season 21. Now, our Patreons are already aware of the foopar I made, and some of you guys will be too, I can see, because I can see who's still signing up, but the free trial did not end on the Friday of the finale, as I planned. It was actually set for the end of the month. So, the 1st of August at midnight, it stops. Now, I appreciate you'll be getting this the 2nd of August, on the Saturday, as our patrons, of course, received this the day before. But thank you to everyone who signed up with the free trial, and even if you left and it wasn't for you, I really appreciate you taking the time out to come and get some more experiences, for one, and for two, for experiencing something wonderful that is our Patreon community. And hopefully you managed to get a feel or a sense of why I think it's such a special place. So, although some people have, and quite rightly, took advantage of the fact the free trial week didn't end when I stated, it has now ended, but all of our Patreons will be receiving the season debut for Season 21 earlier in the week than anyone else, ad-free, as with everything else on our main feed. And of course, they get full access to Dark Bites, a 30-minute Patreon-only podcast, which is out every single Sunday of the year without fail. So when this show takes a break, as we just have done, Dark Bites keeps going. And in the back catalogue of Dark Bites, which you can also gain access to, there's well over 130 plus hours for you to sit and binge at your leisure. So if you do wish to become one of our wonderful Patreon members, just head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Now, I will say, as I say each and every time before a season and during a season, as you know by now, we've made many changes as the seasons and the show have evolved. And of course, we're always going to try to keep evolving in line with what you, the listener, wants. Because at the end of the day, as I've said time and time again, this is your show. I'm a mere conduit for your experiences to be relayed to a bigger audience. But one of the changes we made early on in The Dark Paranormal was to keep the show fluid. And by that I mean, we started initially giving cut-off points for submissions for seasons. We soon done away with that when we realised, sometimes, for serendipitous reasons maybe, the most perfect experience will come through, and I was unable to use it because I'd already fully structured and cemented that season down. We've done away with that routine, so if you have your own paranormal experience that you think would be a good fit for either a minisode, a full episode, or indeed one of our shorter stories on Dark Bites, you can go over to our website or click the link in the show notes, which is thedarkparanormal.com, and click Submit My Experience. And believe me, there's a certain sort of qualia about people who decide last minute to submit their experiences. Some of the best experiences we've had have come from people who've heard this very message and decided, I'm going to sit down today and write my experience out. And I don't know why that is, but it's an interesting thing to think on. However, let's get this pre-show started. And I think I'll begin with some of the experiences, very quickly, that I heard from my mother. Now, the reason you're hearing my voice today discussing the paranormal is down to my mother. Sadly, my mother passed away when I was 16, so being 46 now, I kind of really don't have that good of a memory about our conversations. But I do recall that the rest of our family, as in my father, my brother and sister, they were all football fanatics and would be talking about football or soccer, etc. And me and my mum would talk about ghosts. And even at the tender age of 7, I would not be scared when she would be telling me her experiences or why she believed in what she believed. And there are certain ones she said, two in particular that I will mention now, which always stuck with me. Her mother sadly died before she was 2. So obviously she has no recollection of ever meeting her mother, and she was brought up by her 2 elder sisters. Now one day, my mother was going shopping for shoes, and it was before she started work, so it was relatively early. This shop had just opened, the shopping centre was pretty dead, and she was on one side of this shoe rack, thinking in her own mind about something else, found a pair of shoes and picked them up and was looking at them. And through the shelf, there was an older looking woman. And the older looking woman came round the corner and said to my mother, "Don't buy those shoes, love. They don't suit you." Now, my mum initially wasn't shocked or taken aback or thought, "Who the hell are you?" She kind of nodded and placed them back. And she said a few seconds later, she thought then, who is this person I don't know just coming up and randomly advising what does and doesn't suit me? So she turned to watch this woman, who disappeared. She goes out of the shop, looks left and right. Not many other shops are open, but this woman, who was clearly older than my mother, wasn't there. She went to the shops that were open, and she wasn't there either. When she came home, she told her elder sister about what took place that morning. And my elder sister asked her to describe the woman. Now, although there were photographs of my grandmother, there was maybe one. And it was when she had had her eldest daughter, so she was very young at this point on the photograph. When she described this woman to my eldest aunt, she went white as a ghost, apparently, and said, "That was your mum." That's exactly what she would say. She was rather blunt. "And you've described her to a T." So my mother was convinced that that day she ran into her long dead mother. She also did believe she ran into her dead father. Sadly, he passed away before she was seven. And again, getting back to the, I think she had a sixth sense, this was long before they had a telephone, I believe. Now, my grandfather was a dock worker, which was common here in Liverpool. And one day, apparently, and I've heard this story from my aunties who survived my mum, my eldest auntie had went into the bedroom of my mother and tried to get her up for school, and she refused to get out of bed. In fact, she had the covers over her head and she was crying. And my auntie was rather scared at this, not in a paranormal way, in a something's clearly wrong with her sort of way. This went on for about an hour, and then they received a knock at the door. And it was the police, and they said, "I'm sorry to inform you, but your father's had a massive heart attack in work, and we're here to inform you, etc." Now, of course, at this point, my mother has her bedroom door shut. She's under her quilt crying. My auntie closes the door. She's obviously upset. They have a conversation downstairs, the adults. She goes upstairs to my mother's room, knocks on the door, and says, "Pat, I'm afraid we've got some bad news." To which a little voice from under the duvet says, "Dad's dead." Simple as that. She knew, and that was why she was crying even before anyone knew of this death. Another little inkling into her sixth sense is when her father was alive and she was maybe about five or six. Apparently, there was a full week of her crying and pulling at her dad's sleeve saying, "We're going to be burgled, we're going to be burgled, the house is going to be burgled, I can't sleep." And it got to the point where my poor granddad had to sit on a chair outside her bedroom to make her go asleep. One night, he clearly thought, "This is ridiculous now, I'm going to go to bed." And the house was burgled that very night. She also, apparently, according to her, saw the silhouette of her father after his death on the night she met my father. He was in the shadows of these bushes and she knew it was him. Now, I can't recall the fear factor or the scary element of the story other than the fact she said she saw the ghost of her dad in the bushes the night she met my father. I've also just realised I said I had two and I've now rambled for a few, but I will continue with just a couple more because when my mother died, the week after, I went to see a medium in Liverpool. And this medium was very well respected. It was a very strange setup in hindsight, as in she had her own shop and it was above a bookmaker's. And when you would go up to this shop, you would sit in a waiting room as you would a doctor. And there was cards of thank yous all over the walls and messages of "You've sent me so much peace." And she was really renowned throughout Liverpool and the price reflected that. But when I walked in to see her, as I sat down, she, without me opening my mouth, said, "A woman has just walked in behind you. She's about 45, she's got a brown perm, and she's carrying a baby boy." Now, that was my mother, to a T. And her firstborn child died after 12 days. And I'm one of those sort of people where I don't try and agitate a medium, as in, if they hit something, I will tell them you're correct. I won't give them information, but I will not withhold any correct answers. And then she went on to say something which I thought, even now today, as an adult, I think if you were going to make something up as a cold read, you would not include this information. And what that was me and my mother used to play psychic games, if you will. So, for example, psychometry, the idea of holding a piece of jewellery and then telling the backstory of it. Well, I read a small pamphlet on how to do that. And, of course, my mother was fascinated too with it, so as everyone else went to do their thing, me and my mum stayed in the living room and she passed me her wedding ring and I'd done what it said in the pamphlet to do, and accurately, apparently, described the very room she was in getting ready for her wedding day in the morning. And I'm talking down to the size of the room, the colour of the wallpaper, who was with her, the fact there was a mirror that covered three quarters of the window in front of her. It was very specific, and she said all of those details were spot on. She referred to it as the box room, which is what we in Liverpool call a smaller front bedroom. There was other games we would play. For example, I would ask my mum to leave the living room and I would hide a playing card under a chair. And then we'd make a pendulum and she would come back in with a pendulum and try and find it. And it wasn't a case of it anywhere in the room. We knew it was under one of the five or six cushions. But she was always right. And I was right maybe two out of three times. And it was a very strange but beautiful relationship we had. Back to the medium, the second thing she says, after literally describing my mum, is she's telling me as a confirmation for you, so you know it's her, that you used to play psychic games together. And immediately I thought, that's not a Barnum statement. That's not something that applies to everyone. And then she said, how old were you when your mum passed? And I said, she passed away last week. And the medium was in utter shock, genuinely, and said, the woman stood next to you, her spirit is so strong that I would have assumed she'd been dead for a good while. Then she laughed and said, I take it she was very good at these psychic games. I said, yes. And she said, I'm not surprised. She's clearly a very spiritual person. She then said, she will come and say hello when you're ready to see her. Now, that put the fear of God into me. And about 2 weeks later, I was stood in their bedroom looking down the street. And I don't think I was thinking of mum or anything in particular. And I got the utter sensation of someone walking in the bedroom behind me. And I wasn't scared because of this previous conversation, but I did not turn around and I said out loud, not now, Mum, this would be terrifying. And the sensation left. And even today, I do still think, what, if anything, would I have seen had I turned around? And I'm not sure I want to know either way. Because if I turned round and nothing was there, would I be disappointed or relieved? I genuinely don't know.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We will move on from my mother's stories and stories about my mother. But it's nice, I suppose, to know why you're listening to my voice, why the show exists. And the reason it exists is thanks to this beautiful, wonderful, spiritual woman. So thank you, Mum, on behalf of all of our listeners. And me, of course. But you know that already. So, now I want to go into my friend's stories and experiences from both him and his family. And me, of course, but you know that already, Mum, I imagine. Or I hope. But now we'll move on to my friend's family's experiences. And genuinely, these are some of the most beautiful, and I mean beautiful in a terrifying way, stories I've ever heard. It started yesterday when I sent him a quick text to say, I'm looking at doing this episode where I'm going to say my stories, but I thought it would be good to include some of my friends and family, etc. And he replied saying, oh, do you remember I told you that story where my mum saw a little girl sat on a windowsill and she thought it was my sister? And when she went to the bathroom and looked out the window, my sister was playing in the garden. And when she went back to see the little girl, she'd gone. And that was as short as the conversation was. And then I remember he told me once an amazing story from his dad. And I asked him if he'd send me the bullet points for that. But he went one better. And he sent me a full voice note. Now, he also then forwarded on, after asking his sister permission, his sister's experience, which is something else altogether. So first, we're going to have Neil, my friend, his father's experience, then his sister Claire's experience. Now, for Neil's experience, I'm going to kind of read out the experience, but also include some of the voice note, just to add some authenticity to the story, so you can understand how this all transpired. But this is Neil's father's story. Neil's father was a bricklayer, and on a chilly autumn in 1974, three bricklayers, himself included, all from Liverpool, found themselves in Barrow-in-Furness, which is just north of Cumbria, for a temporary contract. Now, the word is not used as frequently in Liverpool anymore due to how the world has changed. But back in the 70s and early 80s, if you worked as a labourer, you would go and stay in what was called digs. So it would be a B&B, or a place where you and the group you were working with could all go back to overnight and basically get some sleep. Now, these three gentlemen found cheap lodgings in a run-down, two-up, two-down house at a place called Slater Street. The kind of place that you could rent without any questions asked, in a part of town where people kept to themselves and turned a blind eye to what went on behind closed doors. The lodgings were cheap, because the house itself was in deep disrepair. Cracked plaster, rotting skirting boards, and a musty smell that seemed to emanate from the bones of the house itself. But it was what was upstairs that they found truly unsettling.
He said he'd go upstairs, there was no carpet on the stairs, and at the top of the stairs there was two bedrooms, one on the left. If you went in there, it was all painted black, the whole lot. And there was, like, all kinds of... They were doing seances in there, basically, so there was, like, all kinds of pentagrams on the walls and stuff. Candles and, like, witchcraft books and stuff like that. And then the other room, he said it was a bit dingy. I think he said he'd started painting that black and stopped. But all three lads stayed in that room. They wouldn't stay in the other room because the way it was painted.
That was Neil himself, of course, from the voice note he left me. Now, when I hear that one room is completely covered in matte black paint, and apparently in further conversation, the windows too were covered in paint, and then you tell me that the other room was partly covered in paint and then stopped, that tells me either A, something has put the fear of Christ into them and they've ran, or B, maybe the landlord saw room one, found them in room two and said, get out. I guess we'll never know. What we do know is that Neil's dad started to wake up during this two-month contract around 2 a.m. every morning to the sound of somebody walking with pace up and down the stairs. And when he told the other two lads, they didn't believe him. They thought he was trying to wind them up or trying to scare them.
He'd hear someone coming up and down the stairs, like, and then walk across the land, like the small landing at the top. But, like, my dad said, like, he thought it might have been, like, someone next door or something, but it was, like, the middle of the night. But it sounded like it was, like, right outside the door. I think the next morning after the first time it happened, he said, spoke to the lads, he said, did you hear anyone coming in the house? In the house last night, I heard someone coming up and down the stairs, and they didn't believe him. He said it happened again, like around 2 a.m. He woke them up and he said, we can't hear nothing. They thought my dad was winding them up. I think he said on maybe third or fourth night, this was in what, like over the course of one of the weeks, he heard it again. Around about 2 o'clock in the morning, woke the lads up and said, yeah, they're in the house now. Like, someone's trying to break in. I said, they heard someone come up the stairs, back down the stairs. And they were like, right, like, someone's broken here, we need to go and find out who it is.
Now, being three bricklayers in the 70s in Liverpool or in England in general, you would tend to keep your working tools with you. And this was a semi-rough area, there was no lock on the door, so what the guys done was use their brick hod, the hod carrier, to wedge the door shut, to act as a sort of lock. But how useful was that lock?
They had no lock on the door, on the bedroom door. They had, like, the hod stuff there. So, like, they heard someone running back up the stairs. And as they were up the stairs, the door was getting pushed back, like it was bending, where the hod stuff was kind of wedged up against, like, the middle of the door. So as they had this thing running up the stairs, one of the lads took the hod stuff, they opened the door and swung out, and there was no one there. There was literally no one there. So I'm like, that's the premise of the story. You know what I mean? They checked downstairs and all that, and no one broke in. There was no doors, no sign of entry or anything like that.
Now, I know Neil's father, and if you can picture three Liverpool bricklayers in the 70s, where things were a lot rougher than they are these days, let me put it that way. For three grown men to be scared of one person, or what they believe is one person, that's something already. But the fact that that thing, whatever it was charging at the door and bending the door, even though it was held in place with a thick steel hod, is something altogether different. And then the idea of opening it when you believe they're close, swinging the hod at them, which arguably could have killed anyone stood there, but times were different then in the UK, and probably you would have got a pat on the back from the police if you'd bludgeoned a burglar. Although, maybe not to death. Now, the reason I got in touch with Neil was for this experience, because I know I've heard it before. He's told it before where the door was beveled several times before they attempted to swing the hod, and I think that's the real version. I'm not saying this is the fake version. It's a case that Neil rung his dad before leaving that voice note and wanted to try and get all the factual pieces in whilst they were fresh in his brain. But the reason I love this experience so much is because I do know Neil's father. And I know he's not one to take to flights of fancy, he's not a paranormal enthusiast. But this left him, as the kids would say these days, shook.
So, like, that's the premise of the story. You know what I mean? They checked downstairs and all that, and no one broke it, and there was no doors, no sign of entry or anything like that. My dad said he'd never go back. He always remembers that house. He said he'd never go back to it on his own. Like, you know what I mean? He always went back with the other fellas, like, you know, grown men.
Now, you have to think, you have to wonder why a labourer, a working man, a tough man is so afraid of something that he wouldn't enter a house without the companionship of his two fellow workers. And I strongly would think the other two guys were of the same mindset. Neil done some further digging on that place because he, like me, finds things like this absolutely fascinating. And sadly, this building has now been demolished and is currently a car park. But if any of you guys out there remember or are aware of a Slater Street in Barrow-in-Furness during the 70s era, maybe you even know someone who was a guest there. Maybe you even know the people who painted every room black, or attempted to. Another reason this story really excites me is if we go along the line or storyline of the idea, which is quite likely, that these individuals who were painting the room left mid-ceremony or attempt of a ritual, it's very reminiscent of when Aleister Crowley was doing the ritual of Abramelin and the Mage in Boleskine House, and halfway through, left. And rumours abound that he either lost control of what he summoned and had to run for his life, or the less exciting reason given is that a friend of his, Mathers, I believe, wished for some assistance in Paris. So he dropped what he was doing and left for Paris. Why I find that version unlikely is the ritual for Abramelin and the Mage, I believe, takes 6 months. And Crowley bought Beleskin House because of its location, because the ritual requires a certain building to be in a certain location so you can do the necessary things to summon up your guardian angel. But apparently, it's one of the most dangerous things any occultist can try. With that said, is it more likely he summoned up something he couldn't control, or he went to help a friend in Paris? The one thing we do know is he didn't return. Now, I know I did also say we had a story which is absolutely fantastic from Neil's sister, Claire. But if you check the clock, I think we're about time to finish this episode of the pre-show. So what we will do is we will use Claire's story for our very first minisode for season 21. But until the debut of season 21, which I am exceptionally excited to share with you, thank you so much for all of your support, all of your kind words, and don't forget, if you have your own experience, irrelevant of length, click that link in the show notes or visit thedarkparanormal.com and click Submit My Experience. And of course, a huge shout out and thank you to my good friend Neil. In the meantime, stay safe, take care, and I'll speak to you all next week for our debut episode of Season 21 of The Dark Paranormal.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.